Coming today on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zung.
And I just navigated my way through all these nasty people, but never really stopped to think about what was going on and what was motivating them and why they were bothering me so much. And then when I started reading all these Chicken Soup for the Soul stories, I know this, I must sound like I was really late to this, but I was 50 when I realized what a narcissistic person was and what a toxic person was. And then I said, oh my gosh, I'm allowed to get rid of these people.
So the big questions are these. How can we navigate and negotiate every situation in our lives, in our career, in our businesses, in our relationships, and even with ourselves for our own self-worth? In other words, what if you could win every time and have no losers? Let's face it, we're not negotiating just to buy a car or for a pay raise. We are negotiating for living in every aspect of our lives. How can we do that powerfully, successfully, and victoriously? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Rebecca Zung, and welcome to the time where you negotiate your best life. Welcome to another episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung, and it is my pleasure, my honor, to have Amy Newmark with me today. She is a best-selling author and the editor-in-chief and publisher of the Chicken Soup for the Soul book series. Since 2008, she has published 170 new books. It looks like that must be a typo, but I guess it's true. Most of them national bestsellers in the U.S. and Canada. And she has more than doubled the number of Chicken Soup for the Soul titles in print today. She is also the author of the book Simply Happy, a crash course in the Chicken Soup for the Soul advice and wisdom that's filled with easy to implement practical tips for having a better life. She has revitalized the Chicken Soup for the Soul brand, and it has been a publishing industry phenomenon since 1993. And she continues to keep the brand fresh and relevant. And on February 16th, which is just right after this interview first airs, she's got a brand new book coming out called Making Me Time, 101 Stories About Self-Care and Balance. Welcome, Amy.
Well, thanks. I'm very excited about this new book. I think it's something that we all need to do, right? We all need to make that me time for ourselves.
We all do. And I think, you know, it's something that I actually haven't been all that great about myself. I mean, I always joke, I'm half Chinese and half German, which means I have no fun genes whatsoever. And so I've always been one that like works myself way too hard and then realizes, oh my God, I'm totally burning out. So you have a whole really interesting story because you started off in finance and like you were in a whole different world. So tell us a little bit about your story, how you ended up where you are today.
Well, I did start out in finance. It's really funny. I started out in college majoring in Portuguese. I was at Harvard, which is a big impersonal college, you know, lots of students. But there were two professors of Portuguese, and then there was just me. I was the only one majoring in Portuguese. So I took a big impersonal institution and made it very personal. Majored in Portuguese, but of course, there wasn't really any job for me when I graduated. And I had an interest in telecommunications. I was raised by a father who was very into technology, and he was inventing telecommunications companies. So I went into telecommunications when I graduated, and my first job was analyzing the telecommunications market in Brazil. So I got to use my Portuguese and, you know, continue this passion for telecommunications. And I ended up becoming a Wall Street analyst following telecommunications companies. And then I ran a hedge fund specializing in telecom and technology. And then I joined a company that was, you know, a great startup in telecom. And then I went on the boards of lots of companies in telecom and technology. And then at age 50, when our youngest child went off to college and we were empty nesters, I just did a complete change. And we decided to buy Chicken Soup for the Soul. And I became a book publisher. And people just couldn't believe it, because there I was, this hard-hitting Wall Street analyst for years. I was even a short seller, you know, unveiling fraud. I was even reporting companies to the SEC when they were fraudulent, you know, letting the regulators know which companies were defrauding investors. And then all of a sudden I went from Wall Street, where the emotions are really fear and greed. Those are the two emotions. And I went to Chicken Soup for the Soul, where I deal with every possible emotion. But to me, it was all the same thing. Like when I was turning companies into the SEC and looking out for investors, I was doing something that was good for society. And so to me, it's not really any different trying to help people through Chicken Soup for the Soul books. And I've always loved writing. So now I write every single day. I write so much. I just sit down and write every day, edit, think about what books we should do next, what society really needs next. So it's been very fulfilling.
Yeah, I mean, what an inspirational story for so many people. And, you know, so I want to ask you, and you don't have to tell me any specific people, but have you had to deal with toxic personalities in your life or your, you know, business or personal life?
Oh, yeah, I could make a list. I mean, if you're out there and you're doing things, you're exposing yourself to toxic people. Of course, there are the toxic people in your families and in your, you know, more social relationships. But then in the business world, you run across so many people who just bring so much negative energy into your life. And I think back to my very first job after college. I worked for a total narcissist. He couldn't really keep talented people, because I left after a year. I mean, everybody left him, because if you were good, you just couldn't stand staying there. And yeah, Wall Street's full of people who are narcissistic, who have all kinds of diagnosable disorders, I would think. And so it's very toxic. And so yeah, I was basically just navigating my way through a lot of toxic relationships until now. And what's really cool is that I didn't actually understand this about toxic relationships until I started at Chicken Soup for the Soul. So I love what you do, Rebecca, because you're opening people's eyes to what is making them unhappy in their lives. And I just navigated my way through all these nasty people, but never really stopped to think about what was going on and what was motivating them and why they were bothering me so much. And then when I started reading all these Chicken Soup for the Soul stories, I know this, I must sound like I was really late to this, but I was 50 when I realized what a narcissistic person was and what a toxic person was. And then I said, oh my gosh, I'm allowed to get rid of these people. And so over 2 or 3 years, I managed to get rid of them. And I don't think I have any toxic relationships now, nobody toxic in my life. And it's very liberating. And I actually think I'm way more productive as a result, and I'm happier, and I'm just more fun to be around, because I don't have that pressure on me, that cloud hanging over me all the time.
And it is, it's like a super heavy, dark cloud around you all the time. Right?
It is. And I try to put stories in our books that help people come to that same realization. I won't publish any stories by people who come across as being narcissistic in their stories. You know, if they're writing stories that are all about themselves and how everything bad happened to them, and it's just, oh, woe is me, and they're not looking for a way out, they're just kind of wallowing in their misery because they're enjoying it, I don't publish those stories. My people are proactive, and they write about a challenge. And it's sometimes an awful challenge. And then they write about how they overcame it. I mean, I have people who are so the opposite of narcissists. For example, we had one lady whose stories we published for years. And then one day we were reading one of her stories, and she just casually mentioned that at one point she had had that flesh-eating disease, and she had lost 3 of her 4 limbs. Oh, and we were all saying, wait a minute, we've been reading her stories for years and she never even mentioned that before. That is so the opposite of being a narcissist, right? Wow. She didn't even mention this incredible challenge that she has to overcome every single day. So I try to publish people like that. And I also try to publish a lot of stories where I show people that you can identify the toxic people in your life and then you can get rid of them. 100%. And how to do it, you know, and I give them like tips for how to get rid of them. And then this is what your life will feel like once you get rid of them. So I mostly focus on their personal lives, their families, their social lives. And I know you focus mainly on their business lives.
Well, no, personal lives. I mean, because a lot of the people who follow me are dealing with it in divorce. So it's, you know.
Oh, of course.
That's very, very personal. I mean, I always say that the divorce paradox is that during the worst, most traumatic time of your life, you have to make the most critical decisions of your life, of all the things that mean the most to you, you know, your children and your home and your money and your business and all that sort of thing. And so, I mean, but the thing about toxic people and narcissists is that they attach themselves to people who they think they can get a lot of supply from. I mean, so I'm actually, you know, what you were saying is, I mean, I tell people that I have been a victim of narcissists as well, because I want people to know that it's not, they don't target weak people. I mean, and that's why I wanted to bring that out from you, because, you know, anybody can be a victim of a narcissist, anybody, you know?
You're right, because when I tell people some of my past experiences with these toxic people who are narcissists, and I tell them how I started behaving like a little mouse, they say, you yeah. acted like a little mouse? And I say, yeah, I did. It's pretty hard for me to believe that I did that now.
Yeah.
You know, now I've gone from mouse to more like female lion, you know, like very, very strong and courageous and willing to speak my mind and speak up for myself and for other people who are close to me.
Right. I mean, and same here. I mean, I had a couple of situations where I ended up like, you find yourself kind of going along to get along. You know, you don't want to be perceived as difficult, or I don't know. It's like in your mind, you start doing these things that are certainly not who you really are. And it just starts to eat away at your soul. You know, speaking of chicken soup for the soul.
Yeah.
So speaking of chicken soup for the soul, let's talk about Making Me Time. It's 101 stories about self-care and balance. And I love that it's broken down into these sections. And I love, you know, just some of them are like mind, body, and spirit, and accept help and letting go of the reins. And self-care isn't selfish, and you deserve it, and pursue your passion. I mean, like, these all, like, jumped out at me, and they're just exactly what you need when you're dealing with a difficult or toxic personality.
So I think making me time is one of your first steps to recovery, because it's one of the first things you can do where you're putting yourself first. If you have a daily to-do list, and you put yourself on your daily to-do list, like 1 hour of reading or 1 hour of walking or 1 hour of calling friends and chatting with them, or whatever your psyche needs, you put that 1 hour on your to-do list, you're already reclaiming control of your life and taking back control from whatever toxic influences are there. Or maybe you have a perfect life, but you still have been doing for everyone else before you do for yourself. Even when I was raising my kids and they were really little, I do remember that from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. every day was my time. I mean, that was all I could get. Was 10 to 11
p.m.
From 10 p.m. to 11 p.m., I got to get in bed and read a book for 1 hour. Like I just worked towards that hour all day long.
Yeah. But hey, good for you for like actually recognizing that you needed to do that. One of the stories in the book is called A Splash of Insight. And it was written by a woman named Lynn Kinnaman. And it actually really spoke to me, because I had a situation that was similar. And apparently a question was posed to her on social media that shocked her. She said it hit her like a bucket of cold water. And it was, what do you do for fun? And I remember having that's when I had my law firm, and I had the largest family law firm in Southwest Florida for a long time. I had like all these employees. I was running 50 plus multi-million dollar divorce cases at a time. And I remember thinking, I don't do anything for fun. I remember having this like thought to myself. It was like, even taking care of my daughter and making her orthodontist appointments and getting her to theater and all of that was like on the to-do list. It was just like, get it done, get it done, get it done. It wasn't like enjoy any of that, you know? And so talk about that. I love that story.
Yeah, Lynn said when she was asked, what do you do for fun? She couldn't think of a single thing. And then she started thinking it through and she realized that she was busy all the time, which is why she thought she didn't do anything for fun. But then she realized even though she was busy all the time, she wasn't really being that productive. And then she thought about the fact that she'd been wanting to get a new dog for years. And she thought, this time I want a small dog that can travel with me and hang out with me more, and I won't have to exercise it as much, and it will sit in my lap and be happy. And so she got a little Havanese, and in the course of taking her Havanese for, you know, doggy playgroup, she met another owner of a Havanese, and she and this lit lady clicked with each other. They started having Friday play dates that were for the dogs and for mommies, you know, and they started doing all kinds of things together. And they would cook together. They would travel together. They would drive around their area of the Western United States in Lynn's RV and go fun places in Montana and other outdoorsy places. And Fridays became Lynn's special time. She said they were like her oasis in each week. But every Friday was her sacred oasis where she and her friend did fun things. And she said by creating these clear boundaries and making Friday her day, she became so much more productive and so much better at everything else in her life. So it was a great lesson. You could be preserving an hour a day for me time. It could be a day a week. It could be a weekend a month. But you got to have something that you're looking forward to with anticipation that's a carve out that is just for you doing what you want to do.
Coming up, more on Negotiate Your Best Life with Rebecca Zahn.
But she said, you know, over time she kept doing things and it what she needed to help herself kept changing. So then she tried artwork. Then she wrote a blog. And so she said that she discovered there was no one solution. And at any given time, one solution might be right. 6 months later, another solution might be right. But what she learned was that self-care was fluid and evolving, but always necessary.
Have you ever noticed that a fresh perspective can change everything? Well, Truly Divine can help you get there. They offer astrology and numerology, which can be excellent tools for self-awareness and self-discovery. And you can learn more about your own or other psychological tendencies and personalities. They also offer natal birth chart analysis around your own unique birth chart and relationship analysis, which is an excellent tool for revealing how you interact with other individuals and how to overcome challenges in your relationships. One of their customers had this to say, "Thank you for the comprehensive chart. This explains a lot of the internal conflict I've experienced over the years, and now I'm learning to work through it." For more information, head to trulydivine.com and make sure to use the discount code BESTLIFE to get 25% off. This is a truly unique offering at a great value.
Are you struggling with how to negotiate and win? Maybe you're dealing with a personality that's particularly challenging, like a narcissist or other high-conflict personality, and you're feeling powerless. Make sure to download my free Win My Negotiation cheat sheet at www.winmynegotiation.com.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can listen to more episodes that show you the path to how to negotiate your best life.
And that's where I am now. So now I wouldn't trade my brain for the world, Rebecca. Back then, I would have given anything to trade my brain, right? And that's, but it doesn't happen overnight. It's a compounding effect. You got to take slow steps, and that's what I help people.
And now we return to today's show.
And do it guilt-free, right?
Oh, yeah, because it's better for everybody else. And in our Making Me Time book, we have so many busy moms who all of a sudden realize that motherhood is not supposed to be like martyrdom, and that it is okay to do something for themselves every day. And when they finally put that plan into action, they realize they're much better mothers, much better partners, much better work colleagues, much better volunteers, whatever goes on in their life, by reclaiming some portion of each day or each week for themselves, they become better for everyone in their lives and better at everything that they do. We all need that. And I think during the pandemic, a lot of us are so overwhelmed by having children at home or grown children who have boomeranged back to the nest, or just the difficulties of working remotely and wearing the mask and tripping around, not being able to see. We all really, really need to put that equilibrium and self-care back into our lives. And Making Me Time is such an easy way to start yourself on that path to recovery, basically.
Yeah. And a lot of us, though, we have so much anxiety that it's like, how do we even get to a place of like wanting to have me time or being okay with me time? You know, another one of the stories in the book that really spoke to me was called The Anxiety Monster. And it was by a woman named Juliet Huang, a good Chinese girl, which at least she has a Chinese name, and I'm half Chinese. So, it really strikes me that we have so much more access now to self-help resources, including, of course, Chicken Soup for the Soul and everything that you guys are producing. But, you know, it's like we've come so far. I mean, when I was a kid, Phil Donahue was on, and that was pretty much it. And, you know, now there's so much more access, and we've got social media and, you know, so many different ways to be connected with each other. But yet I think anxiety, depression is at an all-time high, well, especially with COVID, but even without COVID. So, you know, I think a lot of us feel empowered on one hand and then more alone and overwhelmed and anxious than ever too. Do you see that?
Yeah, I do. And I think that you have to tell yourself that self-care is recommended for you. It's permitted, and you'll be better for everybody else if you engage in it. So you can't feel guilty about carving out that time. And in the case of our friend who actually wrote to us from Singapore, that's where Juliet lives. She is a teacher, and it's very stressful being a teacher. And she just has always dealt with anxiety anyway. A lot of people who write for us just in general have anxiety issues, and then they share their tips with us, which is really helpful because if it works for them, it's going to work for everybody. And she finally decided that even though she was not a great ballerina, not a great dancer, she still loved ballet. And she might be, you know, one of the older people in her class, but she loves doing it. So she's in her early 30s now, but 6 years ago, she realized that if she went to ballet every single week, it just saved her. And while she was at school and feeling so stressed out about everything, she just kept thinking, I'm going to go to my ballet class. And that is her place of joy. It's not doing anything for anybody else. She's not that great at it. It's just for her. And that's what she does. And that, I think that's just so wonderful. There's another woman in the book who goes horseback riding every Saturday. And everybody knows that that is her sacred time. And she's happy the rest of the week, no matter what she has to do, because every Saturday she goes horseback riding. So it's like we talked about in Lynn's story. It's that oasis that you need.
Yeah. As you just talked about that and the horseback riding and everything, it reminds me of when I, like the year before I decided to merge my practice with two other guys and move to California and do all these different things, I actually started taking flying lessons and I became a private pilot. And I think it was just because, like, I just wanted to be free, like, fly and soar and be alone and, like, not have my phone. And it did. It made me feel better. And so, you know, along those lines, there's another story in the book. And it was called Learning to Take Care of Me, and it's by C. Eid. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but and she lost her husband unexpectedly when she was 36 and a mother of two young children. And a lot of my community and my audience are people who are dealing with divorce or somebody in their life who they have to, you know, deal with losing and losing the, you know, the idea of whatever that future was. And I love the quote at the beginning of that chapter too. It's Brené Brown, who of course is fantastic. Owning our story and loving ourselves through that process is the bravest thing that we'll ever do. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, this was a very typical story. We get a lot of stories from women who are on their own now through the death of their husbands or through divorce, and they have to recreate their lives and often have to keep going strong for other family members who are depending on them. And so in her case, she lost her husband to pancreatic cancer, which, you know, comes on basically symptom-free, and it can be very, very fast. And so it was a total shock to lose her husband when she was only in her 30s. But she finally discovered how to take care of herself. And she said it changed over time, and there's no one right answer. So in the beginning for her, drinking wine was the right answer. She doesn't really recommend that because she was drinking too much wine, but it helped her sleep. And then she gardened until she herniated a disc. But she said, you know, over time she kept doing things, and it what she needed to help herself kept changing. So then she tried artwork. Then she wrote a blog. And so she said that she discovered there was no one solution, and at any given time, one solution might be right. 6 months later, another solution might be right. But what she learned was that self-care was fluid and evolving, but always necessary. And so you don't have to say, I'm going to resume doing artwork. I'm going to go get all that art supply stuff that I have hidden in that closet. I'm going to use it. You might try it and say, well, that didn't work. Well, you're not stuck with that. You can switch to, I'm going to go walk in my neighborhood for an hour a day, or I am going to learn how to bake sourdough bread, whatever it is. And it can keep changing. What's key is that you're allowing yourself to have that time. And she says that she no longer stresses over this question from her friends, you know, are you taking care of yourself? Because yes, she is. And if they say, well, how, she can say, however I want each day, because it does keep changing. And I think some people feel like the self-care that they commit to becomes a new commitment, and that's stressful, right? So it could be whatever you want it to be, and it could change every single day.
Yes, totally, totally. And another story that jumped out at me was in the Accept Help section. And I love just the title of the Accept Help. You know, and it's Surviving and Thriving, and it's about a woman named Terry Hans who survived breast cancer. And I think it really applies to anyone who's trying to survive and thrive a toxic situation. So talk about surviving and thriving and also accepting help.
Yeah, and I've been through cancer myself and months of chemo and having to accept help and, you know, not even being able to get out of bed. So having to accept help for everything. And Terry went through breast cancer and found that after the radiation, she was exhausted. And she had always been the one to do for everybody else. And she said now it was her time to receive. And she had to learn how to accept the help and even ask for the help. Because a lot of people, I guess one of the things that can liberate you first is knowing you should ask for help, and people will give it. They want to hear what you need. You just have to tell them. They're eager to help you. And so she said she had to make herself a priority for the first time in her life. And in her case, she used weekly massages, and she found different things to do for herself, a cancer support group. And then After her last radiation session, she boarded a plane for Disney World because that's what she wanted to do, even though she was exhausted. But she just says that now, even though it's 10 years later and the breast cancer is well behind her, she's never lost that new knowledge and that new empowerment that came from learning that self-care is okay, that putting yourself first is okay, and that asking for help and accepting it is okay. And so many of us strong women, we need to hear that and really internalize that it's okay to ask for help. And all your strong female friends and relatives, well, they do want to help you.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of my audience is actually men as well. And it's like, I think, you know, men have been conditioned to not ask for help too. And like somehow, you know, if you're a strong woman or you are a man, you know, it's somehow in our minds, we think it's like a sign of weakness or something, but it's really not. I mean, we're not built to be islands. We're not built to be all alone. We're supposed to be connected to each other.
Yeah, that's true. When my husband talks to his male friends, if one of his male friends is going through something, like one male friend, his wife had cancer and it was really bad. And my husband would talk to him ostensibly about a business thing and then say, well, you know, how are you doing? How is she doing? And his friend would say, oh, I don't want to talk about it. And then he would talk about it for 45 minutes. And my husband knew that every time he talked to him, he would say, I don't want to talk about it. And then he would talk for 45 minutes. So men really don't know that they need that help. And most men don't know how to give the help either, because men like to be told exactly what you need. They're not going to intuitively guess what you need. And so, yeah, they're just as eager to help as women. They just need more direction. And then it is true, men are even worse at asking for help. So I guess one of the things that we do at Chicken Soup for the Soul is we publish a lot of stories that show that it's actually more courageous and you are a stronger person if you rise up and you ask for help. The strong people know that they should ask for help, and they use the tools at their disposal, which are the people in their lives who love them and care about them and want to help.
Yeah, yeah. And it gives me an opportunity, since we're talking to Chicken Soup for the Soul, to do a little shout out to another one of my episodes, which was Mark Victor Hansen and his wife Crystal and his new book, Ask. And, you know, he says, just ask. Because, you know, people are going to be willing to say yes. And once you ask, the universe starts to line up for you and gives you what you want, you know, just to be a little bit on the quantum law side of things, you know?
Yeah, that's so true. I do that in my business life and in my personal life. I'll get, you know, somebody will say, we don't have blah, blah, or I can't do blah, blah. And then I'll just say, well, could you do such and such? And then they'll say, why, yes, I could, you know, and they're almost surprised themselves. And then I get what I need for my personal life or for business. And then I'll tell people and they'll say, well, how did you get that? And I say, well, I asked for it, you know, and yeah, people don't know. Or if somebody says no, you just ask the question again in a slightly different manner and they might say yes.
Yeah, exactly. Or you just say to the universe, I think I need this. And then all of a sudden it starts to show up, or the person who has those skills shows up in your life. You know, it just happens that way.
I find that all the time. It just works out. Things always work out.
No. And even the toxic situations in your life end up to be great lessons for you. I mean, I have to have gratitude even for the narcissists in my life. As much, I don't want them back. If the universe is listening, I do not want them back. But I'm grateful, you know, for the lessons.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, every hardship you go through makes you stronger and wiser and better at the rest of your life. So I guess when you're going through one of those hardships, just think, well, okay, this one's almost finished. And now going forward, I'll never do that again. And I'll be so much better at everything else that I do. And you're just kind of shedding challenges as you move along, like shedding skins.
Totally, totally. And so the last story I want to highlight is one that I just thought it would be a nice one to kind of leave people with, sort of like something for them to sort of think about what they could do next and kind of a takeaway for their own lives. And it's a story by a woman named Melissa Weber, and it's called How Do You Want to Spend Your Time?
I loved this story. What a fabulous idea. She and her husband actually really talk to each other about what matters to them and what their long-term goals are and their short-term goals and what's on their bucket list. And they had something called a planning retreat. And this was so cool. They just went away, just the two of them. They brought a whole bunch of Post-it notes. And they started talking frankly with each other about what they wanted to do. And it was what they wanted to do with their time, with their the years they had left in their lives, and also with the amount of money that they had. And so the Post-it notes on their walls of this cabin they rented were things like top 10 places I want to travel to, or most important things to do this year, or what should the big purchases be this year? What should the big purchases be going out a few years? What things do we want to do together? What things do we want to do separately? You know, we're going to pursue our passions. Some of those will be separate. Like, you know, he wants to play golf. I don't want to play golf. She wants to play tennis. Oh yeah, I'll do that with her, you know, and new things that they wanted to try also, because I'm a big proponent of stepping outside your comfort zone and trying new things all the time, right? Always do new things. It makes you feel so much more energetic and dynamic. And so after they had been doing this for 4 days and they had all these Post-it notes up on their wall, they finally decided what they were going to do. Like they were going to take that trip to Paris that they wanted. But they also wanted to remodel their kitchen. So they decided, okay, Paris 1 year, kitchen remodeling the next year. They laid it all out and made them very cohesive as a couple, right? They shared the same goals. They thought everything was reasonable. They both got to put forth what they wanted to do the most. And that feeds into another thing that we have in the book, which is the importance of we time, because there's me time, but also sometimes you really need that we time. And that we time could be with a child. It could be with a spouse or a partner. It could be with a parent, but sometimes you really need to make time with another person as well. And so their time together was really their we time. And so we had a whole chapter in the book about making we time, because so many people said they had to work just as hard to carve out that we time as they did to carve out the me time.
Yeah, exactly. So I love that. And where can people find this book? It's called Making Me Time, 101 Stories for Self-Care and Balance. It comes out on Tuesday, February 16th. Where can they get it?
They can get it at Walmart. They can get it, I think Target's going to have it. A lot of the big chains are going to have it. Then, of course, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Amazon. We're distributed by Simon & Schuster. So even if your local independent bookstore doesn't have it, they can get it in 1 day. So, yeah, we always want to support those local independent bookstores. So, you know, totally. Please, if that's a place you like to shop, please order the book there instead to keep those guys going, because they're working so hard during the pandemic. So really anywhere books are sold, and our books are always available as ebooks as well as in print.
Wonderful. And where can people find out more about you?
Well, I have a website called amynewmark.com, and we also have chickensoup.com, where you can read all about our Making Me Time book and all of our other books. And you can even, if you like to write and you want to share a story of your own, you can even go to chickensoup.com and click on submit your story and find out how you can become one of our published writers.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. So, so, so inspirational. And we'll make sure that there's a link to buy the book in our show notes is on YouTube and the podcast. And I'll put a link to your book, Simply Happy, as well, because I think that would be great for people to check out also.
Thanks for stopping by and listening to this episode of Negotiate Your Best Life. I'm Rebecca Zung. Check back next Monday for more inspirational pearls of wisdom. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, I'd love if you would give it a 5-star rating and tell me what you liked in a review on iTunes. Also, be sure to grab your winning negotiation cheat sheet at winmynegotiation.com. And remember, today is a perfect day to start negotiating your best life.